Hey friend, are you swamped with scheduling, bogged down by bookings, or overwhelmed with managing your social media? This message is for you. I would love to introduce you to my secret weapon, StyleSmart VA. This is a company of virtual assistants literally designed by hairstylists for hairstylists. I found them through an interview right here on the podcast, and then shortly after found myself booking a discovery call because I was drowning in administrative tasks and needed help. It's been a few months now, and I can't tell you how much my VA has changed my life. No joke, friends. I am such a believer in StyleSmart VA that I decided to bring them in as an episode sponsor here on the show. Listen, as creatives, our focus should be on the clients and our craft. And now that I have my virtual assistant, I can devote more of my time to exactly that. The beauty of hiring a VA through StyleSmart is that they come to you already trained and able to seamlessly step into your business. From managing appointments and client communications to handling your social media presence, StyleSmart virtual assistants free you up to concentrate on your clients. And that's a change your clients will notice and appreciate. I mean, can we say elevating your perceived value? So when you're ready to level up in your business and take some weight off your shoulders, head on over to stylesmartva.com and book a free discovery call today. You'll also find the link in the show notes of this podcast episode. StyleSmart VA, empowering beauty professionals to focus on what they do best. Well, hey there, friend, and welcome to another episode of the Your Hair Mentor podcast, where I am your host and your hair mentor, Crystal Green. What is happening? This week, I am introducing you to a new friend of mine who is actually here in Reno, Nevada. And honestly, I feel like kind of an idiot. The way that we set this up, I had completely intended on going and recording live in her salon. And, you know, as busy life would have it, I just totally forgot. And so I get alerts in my calendar that are like podcast recording. So I have a system where I, you know, I set up my studio and I go and I sit down. And I didn't realize until like 30 minutes before the recording who it was that I was recording with. And so I was like, oh man. So we actually recorded virtually because that's what we had, you know, on the calendar, and it was totally my bad. So Krista Storm owns a cool salon in town here called Bleach. And Krista has had a very interesting journey. I feel like so many of you are going to relate to her and her journey because she's just so dang relatable. And you can follow her on Instagram and find this to be true as well. She's got a pretty decent following on there. And I think it's because she does a really good job of just showing up being herself. And she tells a lot of stories and shares a lot of things that at the surface, you might be like, does that really matter? But people resonate with her really well. And so she's just created a really cool business for herself, even outside of just her salon space. So I think you're really going to enjoy this episode and this recording as you get to know my new friend, Krista Storm, as well. And that's all I'm going to say about that. So let's go ahead and jump into this podcast episode with Krista Storm. Welcome to the Your Hair Mentor podcast, Krista. I am so excited to have you here. And, you know, like we were just saying off the record, we should have coordinated better and done this in your beautiful salon space. So we might have to have a part two here, but I'm still excited regardless and would love to have you do a quick little introduction on like who you are and where you're at, which spoiler, you're in Reno, but, and yeah, like what you're doing. And then we'll kind of dive into our show today here.
Okay, awesome. So I'm Krista Storm, and I am a hairstylist, extension specialist, and I co-own my salon Bleach with my best friend Carly, and it's located in Reno, Nevada, and then I also help hairstylists take control of their business.
Love it. Is Storm your real last name?
Yeah.
That is so cool. The first time I heard it, I'm like, that's got to be like a stage name or something. Like, who has the last name Storm? That's awesome.
My husband. So I got lucky with that.
I feel like I upgraded with my last name when I got married too. My maiden name was a mouthful, and so now it's just Green, and it's so easy.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. Mine was Anderson, so it was just a little more basic.
Yeah. I feel like Storm fits you well, though. Like, all of your content that you put out kind of has this, like, dark and moody kind of feel to it. And
oh, thanks.
Very, very well fits your name, Storm, so I love that. So, Krista, I actually saw you speak at a local event. I think it was, like, a year and a half ago now at the Reno Beauty Ball. And you kind of gave us, like, a little bit of your backstory and how you became a hairstylist to get to where you are now. I would love to hear that story here today. So could you just give us, like where did you start in your career? And we'll go from there.
Okay. That's so funny you mentioned that, too. I remember being so nervous about that speech, and I had never spoken, like, given an actual speech of anything. And they're like, we want it to be an inspirational speech. And I was like, all right, I'll see what I can come up with.
Well, you did a great job. I feel like it's really hard speaking about yourself, especially in front of a group of people. So kudos to you for that.
Thanks. Yeah, that was a big room. So that's funny. It's also kind of the thing I found that has helped me grow so much online is, like, talking about my story. So essentially, I started doing hair. Well, when I graduated high school, I was, I think, still 17. So when I started beauty school, I was still 17, almost 18. And then by the time I started assisting, I think I was still 18 years old. So I was really young. And it was 2007. By that time, I assisted for a year. And throughout that year, I had opportunity to, like, build my clientele a little bit. So I took clients while I was an assistant. And then I just started as a commission stylist at that first salon and started building my clientele. But this was like a dinosaur in this industry. It was so long ago. So we didn't have Instagram or TikTok or anything like that. So it was very much a slow build and word of mouth. And I mean, I loved the people that I worked with, but the industry was just so different back then. I was taught, you know, like, to get as many people in as possible, like, do anything and everything. Your, like, bread and butter, which I really hate that term now, though, was, like, root touch-ups, haircuts. And that's what I was taught to prioritize and, like, build. And so I did that. And it took a long time to build my clientele. But it was, I mean, it was rewarding when it happened, but it was just, like, it was a different time. It was also, like, 2008, and that's, like, in the heart of the recession. So it was a tough, slow build those first few years.
Yeah, definitely. And was that in Reno that you had your salon or elsewhere?
So I actually grew up in a really small town. I'm sure most people aren't going to listen to this that are in Reno, but I lived in rural Nevada. So it's like a small town called Silver Springs, like an hour from Reno, but it was closer to Carson City. So I would drive into Carson for work every day. And I never actually lived in Carson. I just drove in, and then I moved to Reno when I finally stopped assisting and, like, made enough money to move out of my mom's house. So I would commute. And then I worked there for the first couple of years until I left that salon. And I moved up to Reno and followed my mentor.
Okay. And then at that point, when you moved to work in Reno, were you still, like, a commission stylist?
No. So I was a commission stylist, and I honestly, like, I think I really, I loved being commission stylist, especially at that time when I didn't have the money to, like, or the clientele to actually support myself. The only reason I didn't like being commission stylist was because the manager of the salon just didn't treat me well. And so I just wanted freedom. And so my mentor, the girl that I assisted, she had left, or she was like, I'm going to leave. And I was done assisting her. And I was like, I loved working with her. So I was like, well, I want to follow you. First, I asked them if I could go rent, and I wasn't hitting, like, my quotas, like my monthly, I had to hit certain numbers every pay period, and they would tell me that, but they wouldn't tell me how. And so I wasn't hitting them, and I was frustrated, and I would, like, be doing front desk for free. I feel like that's just the way the industry was back then. Like, the laws of everything were not nearly as clear as they are now. And I think the industry was just like a little bit more, I don't want to say corrupt, but it was just
loosey-goosey.
Different. Yeah, loosey-goosey. It was like, oh, you're not busy? You can do front desk. I'm leaving. Yeah. But you have to stay till 5. Yeah. So they wouldn't let me go commission, so I quit. And then they were like, oh, you could just leave today. And I was like, oh, okay. So I had to finish out my day. It was really traumatic for a 20-year-old. So they took everybody off my books, and then I left, and it was, like, really sad. But I went into rent, and I had no idea what the hell I was doing. So I followed the girl that I assisted to a salon, and I became a part-time booth renter.
Wow. With no clients, essentially.
Yeah, with no clients.
Oh, my gosh. And so what did you do then? How did you reestablish building a clientele then?
I honestly wasn't taught how to, like, to be completely honest. I sat there and I took any referral. A lot of people couldn't get people in, so I'd get their like root touch-ups or haircuts. But I used to, like, I always say, like, if you had like $20 to $100 and a warm body, like, I was your hairstylist. Like, my max was $100 and I would charge. And I just needed like a pulse and a head.
That's so funny.
Because like I had no, not boundaries, but I had no, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Standards, right? I was just like, I'll do it. I'll do anything. And I stayed in that loop for a really long time.
Mm-hmm. So at what point did you find yourself kind of breaking out of that and realizing that you had to put yourself out there and market yourself in a way to attract more of the clients that you wanted to attract?
I think that didn't come for a long time, because when social media came about, I have no idea when it actually was. It like 2010?
Probably, you know? Right around then, when people started using it more. Yeah.
Yeah. So 2010. So at that point, I had left a couple of salons, and it was always like, what? I didn't understand the problem, but I did realize that, like, I got tired of being around the same people that, like, were not on my page. Like, they were older than me, or they, not that that's an issue, but, like, stuck in their ways. That mentality was the mentality. And I was, like, so young. I was still, like, 22. So it took me probably 3 years of that until I found, like, a salon where I felt like I was around people my age and wanting to do the same thing. And I was like, wow, you can work in a salon and it can be like fun and cool. Like, it doesn't have to be like, like all these rules and, you know what I mean? And you just take whoever and like whatever that walks in. Cause I was in that for so long. That's, I think, when I realized that it could be fun and that your environment has a lot to do with your mentality around it, and that it should be fun. But it wasn't until a few years after that I realized how to utilize social media, because I never had a lot of luck with in-person marketing.
Mm, okay.
Nope. Nobody taught me how to do that. And so I was huge on customer service, because I was like, I worked at a Redken salon. My first salon was a Redken salon. So like, we just had so much education. I was always passionate about that. But that back then, it wasn't independent educators. It was like brand education.
Yes.
So I had so much of that, and that's very old school, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I had so much of that education and like that mindset and like mentality. So I had good foundational skills, but once social media took off, people started utilizing it and bringing you in photos. And I was like, how do I do this? So I think it was 2015, I moved salons again, and that's when I honestly used money as my motivator, because I looked around and was like, I'm making the same amount of money at 20, I think I was 27 at the time, I was like, as I've been making since I was 20, so like something needs to change. And so I just set a goal that New Year's, I remember, I was like, I want to make $60,000 this year, like that would be crazy, I never made more than like $35,000. And so I was just like, I'm just going to track like everything that comes into my, because nobody taught me how to track money or keep track of anything. Mm-hmm. I just would get cash and I would throw it in a drawer and I wouldn't think about it again. Like I would use it, but I wasn't tracking it. And then we didn't have like Venmo back then, but so I had cash checks and credit cards. But so much of it, I think we got a lot more cash back then too. So a lot of my income just was like, I just like had no clue what it where it was. So started doing that. At the end of that year, I tripled my income just by doing that. I didn't even like increase my prices. And then I started to realize what I was capable of. Like that $60,000 goal was like I blew that out of the water. So I was like, wow, if I could do this without even raising my prices. And then in that year, I started posting online. I originally loved makeup and posting that. So I would like take selfies of my makeup and I was obsessed with YouTube and watching everybody. And so I think it started with that. I wanted to like, I've always wanted to be, I think, known. And I loved like taking photos of myself. I've always loved doing that. So it didn't hit though. Like I saw nothing of it. So then when I started doing it, I was like, well, let me take pictures of hair. And I started getting clients. So then I was like, okay, how can I continue to get these clients and do what's working? And so I just focused on what was working. And it was me doing that, like literally.
Yeah.
And the hair was so bad.
Well, and our photography skills were also so bad back then too. Like we didn't know anything about lighting or
Oh
positioning,
my
nothing.
God. Background, the mirrored photos. They were
Oh
like
yeah.
my favorite.
With like the split down the middle.
Yeah. But I got an assistant that year too. She helped me a lot. She was younger. I'm like younger people. If you're like, we're aging, right? We're all getting older. You want to keep somebody young around you. She was like, oh, you have to follow this person and this person. So I did. And then they were always teaching, but it was in LA. And I was like, okay, well, then I'm flying. Like, I just fly to LA. We just start flying everywhere because nobody's in Reno. So then I started educating myself.
What was one of the most impactful classes that you feel like you went to that really helped you elevate where you are in the salon?
That's a good question. There's so many. Are you asking in the beginning?
Let's say like in that time frame where you're like, I'm gonna do better, I'm gonna, make that $60,000 mark, I'm gonna elevate myself as a hairstylist, and now I'm going to these classes. What was one of them that you were like, ooh, that was good?
I would say, well, I'll be honest, when I think back to it, it was all so overwhelming. I don't know if I utilized any of them, like any of the things that I learned, to be completely honest. Like you, that's what classes are though. I think it's like so much overwhelm when you show up and then you learn something really cool. And then it's like, how many of us actually implement it and bring it back into the salon?
Ooh, isn't that real? Okay, can we just have a moment for that? Because
Yeah.
I can totally relate to that, where you go and you're like in awe of what's in front of you, and you're having a hard time even wrapping your brain around the entire concept, and yet you're so focused on this like one technique, and then you leave and you're like, what even just happened?
Well, you're inspired, but like there's no follow-through. I think
Right.
that's the problem with classes.
And then you go back to your salon and you're like, do I actually try this on a real person and like hope that it goes as I think it's gonna go? Or do I just do what I'm used to doing?
Yeah, I mean, well, literally, that's what I did. And so, I mean, I can tell you like two people that come to mind would be Johnny Ramirez was the first class that I paid a lot of money for. And he was, it was like a full circle po moment when he was the first person that we brought into bleach. But, and then Eric Gutierrez, him and Lemma, they taught a class. I went to their first class ever and it was hands on too. It was like a 2 day class. So, that was like both of those were good, but my work didn't reflect them because I couldn't quite comprehend what I was learning. So, but if you want to know who I think impacted me the most and taught me how to do that, I would say that would be Maggie MH.
Okay.
I went to one of their her classes, and then I had already scheduled to shadow her. But in that class, she really taught us how to utilize models, and I had no idea that that's what everybody was doing on Instagram. This was probably 2018. And I was like, that's what people are doing. That's how they get these people that look so good and like such good hair and such good transformation. And so she taught me that, and then more realistic like approaches to everyday hair that can give you like Instagram worthy results. And
That's
then
a
she
big
taught me,
takeaway.
yeah, she taught me so much about photography as well. And so that's somebody who I think really impacted my career during a time where I was finally ready to absorb it and put it into action.
Yeah. You probably had to go through some like real changes and growth internally first in order to be able to utilize that information and turn it into something beautiful. Right? Like
I
we
think
have to
so.
be in a mind frame to do that, you know?
I think I had tried so much on my own photography to, I had tried so, like, I got the camera. I had no idea what the settings were. I'd put it in Lightroom and I had no idea what the hell I was doing. And that still took a ton of time even after learning from her. But just, everything. I think one thing that I've always done is if somebody tells me what to do, I'll do it. I just need to know what to do. And like I got backdrops, I did all these things. I just still didn't understand how to like edit photos, and that's when everything really came together for me.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so then at what point were you working where you're like, I want to open my own salon? Because your salon that you have now is like, how many chairs?
We have 8 chairs.
It's a big salon. So that's a big undertaking. So, like, at what point did you know that was going to be a goal of yours?
I don't think that I guess I would say probably 2017, I think, when I got a clear understanding of my business, like entity and all of those things, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to name this as if it's the salon that I want to open one day. And so, because you create a fictitious name and a doing business as name. And so I named it Bleach and I was like, one day I'm going to open this salon. But it was never my goal to be a salon owner prior. I just felt myself outgrowing the salon that I was at. And then I felt myself not fitting in again, if that makes sense.
Interesting. So you felt yourself kind of expanding and growing, and then the others around you weren't. And so you were like, at some point, this isn't going to work anymore.
I think a little bit of that, but I also just think that I also just didn't feel like I fit in. And I don't want to say that it was like because other people around me weren't growing, because I really loved working at that salon, but I just felt like as I grew and the more education I got and the more I poured into it, and then the more I would be like, oh, tell me what to do and I'll do it. And I kept doing that. I realized that I was putting a lot of effort into like the hair that I was doing, and I did feel very lonely in that space, if that makes sense. And I felt like everybody else was like really close, which is amazing, but I just didn't feel like a part of that. Which,
Interesting.
like, for me, I just felt like, yeah, I just felt lonely in the way that I was viewing my work, and like, yeah, I think like my approach to all of it just felt like I was the crazy person in the salon doing all the crazy things, working till like 11 o'clock at night, and I was just like, this is wild, and that wasn't ever a goal to make that forever, but I felt like that's what I had to do to get to where I wanted to be.
You know, this reminds me of an old coworker of mine who shed some light on something years and years ago. This is when I first met my husband, so he and I were just dating. And I'll bring it back around, I promise. So I meet my then boyfriend, and like we just clicked. Like, it was like the easiest relationship slash friendship slash romantic endeavor I had ever been on. Like, there was no confusion or feelings hurt. And I was telling my coworker this one day, who was this man who was probably 25 years my senior. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, Bill, like, you know, he just gets it. And my coworker Bill was like, whoa, whoa there, sister. I'm gonna tell you something. You're excited because he gets it the way you get it, right? And like, that's when you find magic. When you find people in your life that get it, quote unquote, get it the way you do, you feel very connected. And I was like, huh, that's really interesting. And I'd never stopped to think how, you know, there can be so many of us that think we've got it all figured out, but we only have it figured out the way we have it figured out. Other people have it figured out the way they have it figured out too, right? It doesn't mean one's right or wrong. And so like hearing your story, it kind of makes me think in that moment, you were just like, I need to just be around people that get it. Like you're like, I see the picture. I see the growth. I see what needs to happen. And you got it, but you needed someone in your corner that also got it with you. Does that make sense?
Totally. And I think I needed, I think that's so, I wanted to be around people that even if they didn't get it, they wanted it.
Yes. That like they could see that like the it was something they needed to like strive to and work for and care about. And if you're not surrounded by people that aren't thinking about that, it can feel very lonely.
Yeah. And I think that that's where I was and that's where Carly was. Because we worked next to each other. We've worked at the same salon. So she worked at that first salon to bring it back that I was talking about. Went to after the first one that I was like, oh, like hair can be fun. That's where we met. That's also where I met my husband, or through somebody there. But yeah, I think both of us got it the same way. And then we felt, alone because not everybody else did. And the cool thing is like, that's how you create culture, right? Because where we were at, everybody's life is so different too. Like not everybody needs to do that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like not everybody needs to work that hard too. Like, and that's totally fine if that's not what they want. And I think that that was something that I had to really come to a, like be okay with as well.
Mm-hmm. And so then when you decided to venture out on your own and open your salon, did you and your friend Carly decide like, okay, this is how we're going to run our salon and this is the vision for it? Or was it just like jump in and figure it out later kind of thing?
No, for sure. I was able to plan a lot around it. And I obviously did not know what I know now about it, but I did have a clear understanding of like, how do I say this? I wanted to make sure I had a mission and a vision for sure. And I wanted to plan for the future, not just like year one. So I wanted to make sure that I could see myself be okay with like the decisions and the foundation that we laid in that space, like 3 years from then. So it wasn't like a, like, let's make it up as we go. I think the benefit for me is that I had been in every position. Like I've been an assistant, I've been a commission sales, I've been a booth renter, and I've had multiple assistants by that point. And so I've had many people work for me up until then. So it felt really natural, but I also, like we realized the space that we wanted to work in didn't exist. So we wanted to create it. And so we had to figure out how to create that before we opened it.
Mm-hmm. That's how most people end up starting businesses too. They're like, they need something that they're nothing exists. So they're like, I'm going to make it. I'm going to create it. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So when you opened your 8-chair salon, was it just you and your friend or did you have like other people that you knew were going to come on board? Cause that can be a scary thing. It's a huge space and I'm sure the rent is not cheap.
Yeah. The rent's not cheap. This one's actually pretty small. I think it's like 1100 square feet. But, and we only had 6 stations in the beginning. So we took over a salon. And so last year, I believe we added like 2 more stations, but only had 6 stations in the beginning. But no, like you're asking if it was scary, did we just start alone? It was us. And then my previous assistant, she wanted to come work there as well. So she came like the second month that we were open. And we were cool. So I would say this for anybody that's listening that wants to open a salon. You really want to make sure that you're positioned financially to be able to afford everything. Because I can afford, I've always been able to afford the salon, like if I was the only person working in it.
Gotcha.
So that was never like a fear of mine. Still isn't. My goal in life is to position myself so that I don't operate out of any of that, because there's no guarantee that people are going to stay there, right? There's no guarantee that everybody could walk out, right? Like, obviously, that would suck. That would be awful. But I'm also well aware that, like, nothing is secure. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think that's something that you do really well that a lot of hairstylists and salon owners don't take the time to think about. It's like the money aspect of it. And I know you had a course and you have coaching about mm-hmm. money stuff. And you talked about earlier how you finally started like counting your income and then making plans for it. It sounds like a no-brainer that like, duh, of course you should make sure you could like financially, you know, float a salon and like what that would look like. But I think so many of us just go, I'll just figure it out later. We're like creatives and we don't like thinking about money stuff. So I guess I'm just curious, like how did you do that? Like, how did you come to the point where you're like, you're so savvy with money, you know what I mean? Like, what was the catalyst there? Do you think at some point, did you learn from someone or see someone do it where you're like, oh my God, that's what I need to do? Or you're just like, it just made sense to you?
Wow. Well, thanks for thinking that. I mean, I grew up with a single mom, like super poor. So like I lived in rural Nevada and like grew up in a single white trailer. So, and she's always worked in factories like all my life. And so I didn't know anything about money. Like I didn't know how to make it. I didn't obviously know how to track it. And when I taught myself. So the first thing I did was track my money. And then I learned how to get clients. And then I learned how to make money. So once I got those two things down, I was like, okay, let's make the goal bigger. Then I learned how to increase the money. Then I learned how to set goals. And then I became kind of like obsessed. And as the years went by, I'm super fortunate to have like a killer CPA. I believe that's what he is. I'm not sure if he's an accountant, but I know they can do your taxes with, he's my tax preparer though. And he would like help me so much. And then when I hit X amount of money, he was like, you need to turn your business into this. And so he helped me do that. And then I would still try and get my taxes ready. And he was like, this is like, I would always have to pay him to fix them. And he was like, you just need this person to help you. So then he helped me get an accountant. So it didn't happen overnight. And I didn't learn it all from other people. I've had a few people help guide me. And then I paid. And I think that's one thing that people fail to do is pay for professionals. That was one thing. The other thing is I learned all of this with like a pen and paper. I never had help. So I learned it with like a receipt, a pen and paper, and a calculator. And it came to a point where I needed to figure out what each service was costing me because I wanted to make more money. And I was like, why am I not, like, I know this money's coming in, but I'm not seeing it still.
Mm-hmm.
So then I sat down and was like, I taught myself how much an ounce of color costs, an ounce of powder, like an ounce of developer. And then I always tracked everything and measured it, luckily, because that's what I was taught when I was an assistant. So then I did that math. And then I figured out this service costs this much, I'm charging this much, and I'm paying this much to stand behind the chair. So each service is actually costing me, and I just did it and kept doing it. And then I was like, well, I want to make this much. So this is what I'm going to charge now. And like my demand was there. I did the hard work and created the leverage. Then I had to do the hard work and understand the numbers. So not sure if that was like a tangent that I went on, but
it's good.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah. You know, it's such a funny thing that when you're talking about this, it makes me think of me going on like my health journey. It was like, I grew up not knowing a damn thing about nutrition, well-being, any of this stuff. And in my early 20s, I kind of clued into ways to be healthier. And then I became obsessed with it. And it was like, oh, I know enough to know that I don't know anything, so I need to learn more. And it was like this snowball effect. And now I'm like, it's kind of a weird obsession. And like, you know, my husband and I geek out on stupid things that we read, or they're like total rabbit hole, weird nutrition things, right? And it sounds like that's kind of what you did with money. And although both things are very important, like, you know, health and longevity is also very important, but like tracking your business and your income is huge. And that's something that I've never wanted to do. Like I'm like the dreamer when it comes to personalities. I'm always the one that's like, money is abundant and it's just flows and it's fine. I never counted anything. Like cash was like this like free thing. It was just like, I was so stupid with my finances all the time, but I was able to like have enough of it incoming all the time that it was never a problem. But totally. Oh my God, if I would have sat down and like actually wrote goals and counted backwards and kept track of things, I can only imagine how much more money I would have made, right?
Totally.
It's fascinating. I love hearing this because it just sounds like you like just nerded out on it in a good way, right? That made you more successful.
Yeah, I nerded out on it, and then I taught my assistant immediately. I was like, dude, this is this. You should raise your prices. And then through that, like I said, in the beginning, I didn't have boundaries, and I was like really shy and insecure as well. So raising my prices was hard. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm gonna start talking about this, because I think social media was my outlet, my way to kind of like express myself around it and then educate clients, because I obviously people push back every time you do it, especially when you're like much lower, you attract a different clientele as well. Like when you're a beginner always. And I've been doing this long enough. I see it. I see the phases of client building and growth. And it was just really interesting. I wasn't the same person I was when some of these people started coming to me like 5 years prior. So as I grew, some fell off, some supported. And that's where I kind of got my voice of being like, you should be able to charge XYZ for this. Not like it's going to be easy. It's not like it happened overnight. But like also, you should be able to communicate with people as to why. And you should understand why you're doing this. Because if you don't have a firm understanding of it, then of course they're going to question it. So like, let's get clear for like, let's learn how to communicate well with hairstylists, but let's also educate ourselves as hairstylists so that we can then educate the clients.
Yeah. And I think a spot where a lot of us fail is when it comes to understanding our value that we're providing, right? Like it's most of us just pull numbers out of thin air when we go to charge prices, right? We're like, well, I don't know. Yeah. Well, Susie down the street charges 200. So I guess I should charge 200. And we don't know why. We just are like, And so then we feel weird when we go to charge the price. We want to like emotionally discount because we don't think we're valuable enough. But if you actually understand, like numbers are, they don't lie. Right. And so you can be all emotional all you want, but if you're like, listen, at the end of the day, like this is the income I need to make and what it costs me to work here. So like, that's my price. You feel good about it. And as long as you're delivering the service that warrants that price, like there's no wiggle room, right? You feel like you're worth that value.
Yeah. I think that's so funny you say that. When I first opened the salon, I'd have meetings with some of the girls and I was like, look, these are the numbers and facts. And she was like, I hate you right now, Krista, because that's just me. I had like this sheet labeled numbers and facts. So that's what we were calling it for a while, but it's so true. So I tracked everything. To answer your original question, I think, was I wrote everything on a note. Like I probably have it in my desk right now, like a notebook. My dog had ate it once. It tracked all my money, all my income. And it was like, it felt like it was my Bible. Cause like I was obsessed with reaching these numbers. And anyways, I had a friend 2020. She was like, you're literally crazy. Like you need to put this in a spreadsheet. So she made me spreadsheets and we launched my course Leech Money. And we like, she helped me do it. And then it did well. Like it was cool. It was great for both of us. She helped me. And then we took it offline and I had launched it again, but I kind of realized over the years that like just telling somebody also what to do, people like I could tell, you could tell me exactly what to do with health am I going to do it? Just because you're obsessed with it? Yeah, only if I value it, but also, like, sure, do I want to be the healthiest person? Yes, but, like, I have habits and I have fears and I have limiting beliefs. So if I am able to, like, if you just give me your guide, I can watch a few videos, but am I going to follow through with it?
Right.
Probably not. So that's where now I have coaching, because I realized that I gave people a ton of information, but too much information, like information on top of everything else that we have going on, is just going to create more overwhelm.
Right. It's like going back to the first part of your story where you said going to classes and you like didn't know what to do with the techniques. You're like, yeah, what do I do with all of this?
Yes. It's like, this is great information. I want to be like you, but how did I get to where you are? And that's always the question in these classes. What do you charge? That's the wrong question. You're not him, her, or they that are up there. Like, you're not that person. So the right question would be, what is it that I have to do to position myself to one day be able to charge what it is that you're charging, and where do I start?
Yes.
But they're on stage teaching a technique, which is great, but it's not answering the questions that people are hoping to get the answer for when they show up to the classes.
Yeah, you know, I kind of love this because my passion is teaching hairstylists better customer service, like literally how to serve clients better. And like, it's not sexy and neither is money. You know what I mean? Like trying to teach people to keep track of their money is so not sexy. What is sexy? Yeah, like extensions are sexy and balayage is sexy. So people want to go learn the sexy stuff and just get better at doing that and like avoid the things that really make them money.
But what makes the money? A killer consultation, amazing follow-up, and an amazing client experience, right?
Yes, and keeping track of their money.
Yeah, keeping track of your money.
Right? Like, okay, yeah, getting the people in so they can pay you the money and then understanding what to do with that and like how to position yourself in the market. So it's like, I totally resonate with what you're saying because I'm like, it's hard to get people to buy in when it's not like quick, easy, and sexy and they can't just, download a thing and learn it really quick.
Well, yeah, I was realizing like, I just like a few people would follow through on the Bleach Money course. And then I was like, I'm giving them this information. They have the tools, but how many of them are actually following through on this price increase? And now like flash forward 3 years, now I do coaching. So I do one-on-one coaching and group coaching. Even in that space, I'm like, all right, we're going to, like when I first started doing it, I was like, all right, we're going to do this price increase, like we're stoked. It's the courage that people need. Like people need your courage. Like I need the courage of a personal trainer to be like, get your ass up. We're working out. It's 5 a.m. Like you're getting out of bed. You're putting your shoes on. Like that's what people are paying for. They're paying for that push. And then for us, like for somebody to like decrease the time of it. If you just give, if a personal trainer was like, give me X amount, I have no idea how much they cost, but give me X amount of money and I'll give you this set, this work, I'll like shoot you a text and tell you what to do every day. It's like, I could give up halfway through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with your coaching clients, what have you found is the like biggest hurdle or stumbling block or fear that they have to get through in order to finally start implementing what you're teaching them?
That's a great question. I think it's different for everybody. What I have found is it is, as it was with me, I think fear of judgment from our clients, always.
And right? Judgment in the sense that like we're not good enough to be warranting charging those prices kind of thing?
I think that and the confrontation. So I think one of the biggest downfalls for stylists, you might be able to, I would love to know your thoughts on it since you love talking about customer service so much. I think it's communication.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we can learn to communicate well in the consultation and throughout the client, like throughout the service, people will question us less.
Yep.
Same with price point, right? And then when it comes to raising our prices, if we're open and honest about like, hey, like this isn't, you know, this isn't a hobby for me, this isn't cheap, this isn't whatever. Not that we always have to be like, this is so expensive. I don't love that approach either. And I don't love like talking about it online, like you're like why you're doing certain things. But I just think like having the ability to communicate with multiple different people and like confidently is a skill that takes years to learn and a lot of practice. And it takes a lot to build confidence in that. And I think that that's the biggest hurdle, right? We care about what these people think of us, but only because we're focused on, I think, that too, versus like the logic aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I think I'm just a really logical person. So it was really easy for me to be like, okay, I don't care about these emotions when it comes to this. I'm just going to talk about that.
I think you're unusual in that regard. I think most hairstylists are very emotional, heartfelt people that tend to just really lean in hard on the people-pleasing role. Because it gives us like altruistically some good feedback, like, oh, we're doing good. We're making people feel good. Therefore, I'm a better person. There's like this little loop that we find ourselves in. And so a lot of us have a hard time with the logic part of it. But this business in particular, I think, is so unique in the fact that like people come back to us because, yes, we're providing a service, but we're also providing feelings. And so there is some heart-centric aspects to it that you have to lean into a bit.
Yeah,
you still have to be a logical business person too. So it's really kind of this weird gray area of both.
Yeah, definitely. I think that I spent so long in the beginning people pleasing, but not, it's funny when you say that. I'm like, did I do it because it made me, I've never been like the warmest. Very direct. So I think like, I always wanted people to like me though. I think that that's something that everybody has, right? Mm-hmm. We all want people to like us. And so I think that that's the hurdle. Like when it comes back to that you're asking me, like, what's the hurdle? I think we all want people to like us. So we don't want these people that we've built relationships with. And even though I'm like that, I still like, I love my clients. I have great, like they've been coming to me for so long. They're so loyal and they've put up with, you know, schedule changes, pricing, like so many things where I'm like, man, and I still get the same nerves that everybody else does. Like, if I have to increase this, like, will this person leave? Like, I don't want to do it because we're so empathetic too. It's like, but would I pay for this? And am I paying for this in a different way where the value is there? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it comes down to like understanding the value that you're giving your clients to, right? And so if you, like, I really hate it when stylists get online and they feel like they have to defend themselves for their prices. And they're like, my color costs this much and my rent costs this much and I have to pay for health insurance. I'm like, stop. Your clients don't need to hear that. It doesn't matter. You could pay $0 a month for your expenses and still charge the prices you want to charge because it's about the value you bring to them, not because of your bills they need to pay, right? So I think if you're good at providing value to your clients, then they are going to just love on you, you know, like they're going to feel like they're getting a good deal, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's figuring out what is that value, right?
Right.
For your ideal client, it's going to be different for everybody. Like my ideal client is not somebody who like loves deep conversation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They work a lot. They work while they're, so it's like figuring out what your client, what that value is to that person so that you can get that person in your chair, which I mean, is like another one of my favorite things to do because I just love marketing and social media. But figuring out like, what does the person that you want to attract in your chair, what do they value? What do they need from you? Because it's like, they don't care about your health insurance. They don't care. Like that stuff is irrelevant. And like Louis Vuitton or whatever is not telling you the cost of everything. It's literally just a value and how they position themselves in the marketplace. That's it. Mm-hmm. For all you know, that bag could cost them like $80 and you're paying $2,000 for it.
Right, right. But you're getting feelings out of it and a sense of, what would you say, like status. And like, there's all these like things that come along with having the bag that you're getting. So they're making sure you know you're getting those things when you buy the bag.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like that's what you're paying for. And so that's kind of the question for, I think, every hairstylist is like, what is your position in the marketplace and what is the value that you're bringing to it? And everybody is so different. Why I think there really is like no competition because everybody is so drastically different. I see it every day. Owning a salon's been so cool because I just see the people that come to certain stylists and I'm like, it just makes sense. but I can see it. I think it's a lot harder for us to see it in ourselves, like what it is that we're bringing and being out there. And I think that's another thing that I found is hard for working with hair, like so many hairstylists one-on-one and in coaching, is helping them realize their uniqueness and what it is that they bring, like not only to their clients, but what then they can then bring online and position themselves that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, as a salon owner, do you guys have a, like, salon-wide ideal client? Like, is there, like, for bleach, is there an ideal client? Or is it that every stylist in there is attracting their own ideal client?
I would say both. Like, I think that we have an ideal client, but I think every girl, and it's similar. Like, there's similarities in everybody's ideal client. But I would say that we lean probably, like, I encourage the girls to really do that work on themselves so that they can get who they want in their chair, because I know that my clientele would stress out a lot of them, right? So I guess the latter is probably more realistic. I have an ideal client of the salon, but I'll be completely honest, it's probably going to lean more towards my ideal client, right?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't send that person to, like, let's say, my assistant that is also, you know, that is where I was however many years ago that was. You know what I mean? I would... Let's not talk about how many years ago that was.
I know, right?
But I wouldn't send that person to her, right? That would stress her out. That would stress me out back then. So I would say that we lean more towards everybody has their own ideal client. Mm-hmm. And we want Bleach to be a place where every stylist is individualistic and can create the career that they want within that space.
And are your stylists booth rent or are they employees or?
They're both. So they're employees and there's booth renters. So we just have, I mean, obviously the way that I structured the salon in a way that I wish I had followed to set me up for financial success and a career of like freedom and happiness a whole lot sooner than what I had to experience. So that's how we set up the salon. So they reach benchmarks, but I also teach them how, track it. And we do like coaching in the salon. I do coaching in the salon with the girls and then help them implement all these things so that they can reach their goals. And then when they hit a certain number gross, they have the option to go booth rent if they want.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It probably creates a good sense of like, you know, there's ability to grow in this space too. And then like the sky's the limit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what I wanted, just because my fear with a commission salon only is like people will work there for a little while and then leave, right? Because they want more opportunity. That's what I did. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to also create, I think for me, my stance on the salon might be different than a lot of other people. But again, going back to me feeling so lonely, I wanted to create a space where there was people that I felt were on the same level, like mindset level as me and growth level. And so you just rarely get that with people that are all beginning. And that's a lot of the people that are in commission, right? So I never want to be like the smartest person in the room. I want people that are like winners around me. And so not that you're not if you're a commission stylist, but like people that are ready to go rent are going to go rent regardless. And I just wanted to create a space where they could do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious how many days a week you are working behind the chair now.
Behind the chair, I'm working 3 days a week currently. That's been everybody at Bleach works 3 days a week.
Oh.
So that's how we set it up. And because I think that hairstylists should only work 3 days a week, personally.
Get it, girl.
There's like, I mean, there's so much other stuff that we have to do to make sure that the business is running. So I'm like really big on like 3 days a week, but next year I'll be going down to 2 days a week just so that I have more time to focus on the salon, and then I'll be pouring more into my business coaching with hairstylists.
That's awesome. Yeah, I could almost see you doing some sort of like, maybe not TV show, but like something like that where it's like, do you remember Tabitha's Salon Takeover, where she'd go in and like redo the whole thing? Like, you're gonna be like the financial audit for salons. Be like, okay, let's talk about your money.
Oh my gosh. So I have a business coach, and I was talking to him, and I was like, I want to go into people's salons. Actually, Sydney, who works with me, was like, the best way to help somebody is to do this. So I have to say that it was her idea, but I was like, this is so fun. I've already done it with somebody. I didn't look at their numbers. I'm not like a bookkeeper or anything, so that would stress me out. But I love watching like the consultation. What is your client experience look like? What these are the things that really matter that are preventing you from, making the money that you want to make. It's not everybody thinks it's the marketing online. It's like it's this. It's their brain. It's their mindset. It's like what's between our ears is what's keeping us in this loop. How can we get out of it the fastest way possible? But yeah, I'd love to do Christmas salon takeover.
I love it. Take 'em by storm or something is what it could be called.
Yeah. So funny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Well, cool. If anyone is listening here and they're like, oh my God, I suck with my money and I want to know how to get better about raising my prices, how can people get a hold of you to try to reach out for more?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram at Krista K Storm. So there's just a K in between Krista Storm. And then you shoot me a DM. I would love to talk to you about any of it. And then there's a link in my bio to sign up for my coaching waitlist. I'm fully booked right now with one-on-one coaching, and I have group coaching as well, but that's kind of where it's at. So you can join my waitlist, and then I'll get to you as soon as there's an opening for that.
Awesome. I bet you'll have quite the wait list, my dear.
It just keeps getting
I
bigger.
love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on here today and having a chat with me and sharing your story. It's really insightful and enlightening.
Thank you for having me. It was really fun.
Yeah.
I have to say, I've never told that whole long story of how I started and how I was fired from my first salon. So
Well, I'm glad.
you got it on this
Yeah, you
podcast.
heard it here, folks. Awesome. Well, I am serious. I need to follow up and be in your salon to interview you. So maybe
You
we'll
should
try to
do it.
touch base again sometime this next year and we can actually be in person having a chat, which I think would be super fun because for
Yeah.
anyone that doesn't know, your salon looks so cute.
Oh, thank you.
So
It's
fresh.
so
Okay.
fun. Yeah, I'd love to have you in it.
All right, awesome. Well, we will stay in touch and thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Now, friend, since the time of this recording, Krista has grown her brand and her company quite a bit in the last, I guess, handful of weeks here. She has got some really cool brushes that I am going to link in the podcast show notes here for you to go check out. They're a detangling brush that actually has metal bristles. Would you still call them bristles if they're metal? I don't know. But they're like cool and they're chrome and shiny and really interesting, amongst other things that she has for sale. And so I just felt like I needed to mention that for her. This is not a plug-in. I am not paid by her in any way, shape, or form, but I just super respect her and her business and what she's doing for herself. So I figured I'd add that in there for you at the end of the show here. So as I always love to say, thank you so much for listening. It is my pleasure to be here as your hair mentor. And until next time, my friend, you have a wonderful hair day, and I'll see you then. Okay, bye.